There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along. Remember the text line and the phone line at 343-0106, plus that talkback feature using our brand new FM Talk 106.5 app. Hopefully you've downloaded that. If you click on the microphone icon on the front screen of that app, you can always send us a message here for us to play back on the air. As I mentioned at the end of last hour, going into the news, joining us a guest. It's actually, he's sat here in the studio and done radio shows in the past right here at FM Talk 106.5 for another audience. He's one of the senators of the college football universe and in the world of print, in the world of electronic media. He's also vice president of editorial and senior writer at on3.com. Murphy High School graduate, Mobile expat living in the frozen north. Ladies and gentlemen, Ivan Maisel joins us now. Thanks for your time, Ivan.
I love that. Yes, I am an expat.
Yeah, we still claim you. You know that.
Good.
Right. And it's been some years, but you're always welcome to the studio to do a show. I remember you came in and did your shows from here for a while, so that was good.
I hosted Feinbaum out of that show one day.
That's right. You sure did. Yeah. You sure did. Yeah. I want to talk about this. You have a book signing event coming up here at home in Fairhope at Page and Pallet, and you wrote a book on grief and love and the loss of your son. And this is six years ago, right, Ivan?
Loss of Max? Almost seven.
Almost 7 years losing Max. And this is a bravery, I think, you know, is an understatement here for you to come out and talk about something so personal so publicly in this book.
Well, it's nice of you to say that, Sean. It's not the brave part is continuing to live and try to live your life, is putting one foot in front of the other. You know, writing is what I do. And we decided early on, my family, my wife and two daughters, is that we were going to be public about the fact that Max ended his life. You know, we didn't want people to infer from our silence that we were ashamed of him. Mental illness is a disease, and he was sick. And the other part of it was we were public for selfish reasons, at least I was. The last thing I wanted to do was have to remember who had top secret clearance and who only knew some. And, you know, I was going to have to check my list every time somebody said something to me to see what they knew. You know, it didn't matter. It doesn't matter.
You know, you said that, and I know a quote here, you were saying that you said, we have never been ashamed of Max, and I said, and we're not going to start now. This is what we found out today. That was you talking to family members up there in New York, right?
Sure. That was the week he disappeared, and Max, what we think happened, we don't know exactly what happened, but what we think happened is that he walked out onto Lake Ontario in the middle of the winter. It was an awful winter until the ice gave way. But in those first days, we didn't know. And the police were adamant that they would not say that Max had acted with intent until they developed evidence that indicated that. And they went through his credit card bills and kind of put two and two together and this is what this looks like. And most of my family from Mobile and the Southeast had come up to Rochester, New York, where Max was in school, And my wife's family is from upstate New York and New England and down the eastern seaboard, and they were all gathered there. And so we had to decide at that point what we were going to tell them. And we decided to sit, tell them everything. What difference does it make?
Yeah. And I want to talk about that process as well. But first, let's go back and let's talk about Max. Let's talk about your late son, Max. Who was he?
Well, I love to talk about Max. It keeps him present. Max was our middle child of our three, our only son. Sean was a different kid. He was somewhere on the spectrum. They could never really pinpoint what it was. He had trouble with social cues. He was shy and withdrawn. He had walls up because he struggled to communicate with people, but behind that, he was just a big, doughy lump of sweetness. He really cared about people. He had less than no interest in sports, which...
How did you deal with that? Yeah, how did Ivan Maisel deal with that?
Well, I just decided it was proof that God had a sense of humor. I grew up, reading the sports pages. That's how I learned to read. And I grew up, I learned division by doing earned run averages. I mean, I was a nut, and I just assumed my son would be the same way, and he wasn't. But, I was able to build a bridge to him and through humor. I taught him Marx Brothers and Looney Tunes at an early age, and he loved movies. He loved Broadway shows. We live an hour from Manhattan, and we took the kids to Broadway just because the best people the best actors and singers in the world are an hour away.
Sure.
We tried to do that. And he developed an interest in photography, and that's what he was majoring in at RIT in Rochester. And he was quite a good photographer, but hated to have his picture taken, which is the genesis of the title of the book. I have a photo, the wallpaper on my phone is of our three children, taken 6-7 months before Max died. And the two girls are looking at the camera with big smiles on their faces, and Max is looking up and away. And I was just looking at the photo one day and a couple of years ago and just saying, look at me. And he won't. So I keep trying to catch his eye.
Ivan, that title to me, hearing you say, "I keep trying to catch his eye," has the literal you're describing, but also a figurative component, right? I mean, it's literally trying to catch his eye for the photograph, but it says something more. Catching his eye, is that bonding? Is that understanding? What is that figurative part of "I keep trying to catch his eye"?
Well, that's an interesting question, Sean. I think we would have loved Max to he hung on as long as he could, and he hid the depth of his depression from us. I mean, he was being treated for depression, and we knew that, and we're fine with it. But he hid the depth of it from us. He hid it from his doctors, as best we can tell, according to them. And I would love for him to have been okay trying, to get more help. But I think he was just tired. And, it's really hard to, we think rationally. And somebody that is in the depths of mental illness is not thinking rationally. And it's really hard to figure out the last days, because we just don't think that way.
A lot of people listening here and are thinking about, their children, and you said he kept it hidden. Is that, you talked about Max being on the spectrum as well. Do you think that had any part of making it harder to see clues, or do you think that wasn't part of it? I mean, that you had no real warning here.
We did not, and, it's interesting. As it turns out, and because Max was 21, he was he was getting help at the mental health center on campus, and they have this a decision to make because the kids are of legal age. They do not have to inform the parents, and they are wary of doing so because they are trying to establish trust with the student. Mm-hmm. And it's a gray area. And, you know, of course, we wish they had let us know that he had come in and was as dire as things were. You know, he was, but he did not tell them he was thinking of ending his life. And so they, you know, they didn't know either. But they, you know, they did know he was spiraling and didn't tell us, and they explained why to us, and we still wish they would have, but you know, they certainly didn't see that it was possible that he would end his life. So you know, we were all mystified
as that what had happened came to light. And you said you went and had the other family there and went ahead and told them, which I'll believe in the information you had gotten from law enforcement and the divers had been working searching there. Mm-hmm. You knew it in your mind, so you were telling your family members. Did saying that to them take it to another level of grief, or was it not, you know, I can only imagine vocalizing it, saying the words.
Well, no, not for me, Sean. I mean, it's an illness, and I knew that then, and I just made the decision we had never been ashamed of Max, and we weren't going to be ashamed of him now. He was sick. And if somebody applies stigma to somebody who ends their life, that was not a burden I was going to carry. I had enough to say grace over. You know, that I decided was a reflection on them. And I continue to feel that way. Mental illness needs sunlight. We need to talk about it. You know, our parents' generation, at least my parents' generation, I'm older than you, didn't talk about cancer.
Right.
And, you know, now cancer is out in the open, and look at the progress that's been made. And we are beginning down that road with mental illness, but it's almost like climate change in the sense that, well, yeah, we know we need to do something, but the problems are coming at us faster than whatever it is we're doing. And we need to ramp up what we do to bring mental illness into the sunlight.
What do you say to other parents there, you and your wife and your daughters, let alone the extended family, navigating that grief that I can only imagine? I mean, is there anything takeaway there that you can say, here's something that helped us, here's something that hindered us? What can you
offer?
Well,
yeah, I mean, that's why I wrote the book in large measure. And again, all grief is individual. And I always tell people, you know, your mileage may vary. But what helped me was understanding that the depth of my grief was equal to the amount of love that I had for Max. And I began to think about that a few mm-hmm. weeks after he died, and it just dawned on me that really all my grief was my love for Max in a different and very painful form.
That's beautiful.
But once I decided that grief is love, I relaxed. And I kind of let it happen, understanding that this was just because I loved him so much. And that really helped me. And I learned, you know, and this a friend of mine said this to me, and it may be, I think she got it from a greeting card. It sounds like it came from a greeting card. It's, you know, grief is standing at the shore, and sometimes the water washes over your ankles. And sometimes it washes over your head. But in both cases, it goes back out. And as time passes and you have a good few minutes, and then you have a good hour, and then eventually you have a good day, you know, it helped that when you do miss them, to understand that those feelings or that depth of that pain is, you know, is going to ebb and flow.
Yeah, it's really a great way, great insight into that, that it ebbs and flows. Because, yeah, people who, you know, go through grief like this, I'm sure you have a day it hits you way harder, even though years have gone by.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. And the most comfortable place to be, especially in those early days, was the fetal position. You know, I would have been happy there. But I kind of understood that life was going to happen, and I could not stay back where Max was. And if I tried to, then when something good happened to me, when there was a joyful event in my life and I wasn't present for it, then I've lost again. So I had to make myself understand that just because this one really, really bad thing happened, it didn't mean that all good things were going to stop happening. And that really helped me too.
Yeah, I imagine that so many people feel a sort of guilt of enjoying anything while dealing with grief. Is that fair?
Yes, but it is. And honestly, Sean, I'm going through what I have gone through. I'm a more empathetic person. I am a better person, and you know, would I rather be the emotionally stunted troglodyte that I was? Sure, but you know, that was not a choice on the test. You know, I studied the multiple choices very carefully, maybe it's just that Max has made me better in a very sad way.
Wow. It's, pretty moving what you're saying. I know it's, what led you to write this book, and this book I'm sure can help a lot of other people. So once again, I keep trying to catch his eye, A Memoir of Loss, Grief, and Love. You're going to be doing a book signing for people, right?
Right. At Page and Palette in Fairhope, tomorrow night, Thursday night, 6:00.
And I'm sure there's a lot of, I'm looking at our text line right now, and you're speaking to people that have gone through this themselves. And so even though, you know, people that haven't, they can still learn. I've learned a lot just hearing you talk about it to this point. So I appreciate you opening up and to your grief and your love and teaching us all a lesson. Ivan, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Here is Ivan Maisel, our guest. I Keep Trying to Catch His Eye, A Memoir of Loss, Grief, and Love, in bookstores now, and that event going on at Page and Palette tomorrow evening. And we'll put a link up on the social media feed so you can check it out right there. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 128 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We'll go to the news here in a second, then come back out. Probably keep our text. Thank you for the text. I keep these texts maybe just between us out there. My heart goes out to y'all on the text line. It truly does, as it does to Ivan Maisel and his family. What a tough one! But what a way to look at things. You know, the idea of your grief being equal to your love is quite something. But thank you for the text. I do appreciate those. I tell you what, when we come back from the news here, I saw this. Maybe I can make this thing work here, because there's a headline on WKRG, and we'll get to the bowling alley violence too. Jeez Louise. I mean, bowling alley. But they have a headline here. Year-round daylight saving time passed in May. Why is Alabama still falling back? Now, we've told y'all before why on the show, but maybe we can bring this story about SB 388, which is let's stay on daylight saving time year-round, with vaccine mandate into the discussion. Maybe I can scarf those two pieces of wood together when we come back. News is coming up in Dr. Bill's forecast, all straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106, plus the FM Talk 106.5 app that gives you that talk back feature. Check it out. Download that at the App Store for iPhones or Google Play for Android users. Just look for FMTALK 1065. All right, let's check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Angelo, are y'all still buying?
We are. As a matter of fact, with gold and silver prices up from where they've been, and unfortunately with gas prices up the way they've been, we have had a lot of people coming in wanting to find out what their stuff is worth right now.
Yeah, and you know, you can come in if you're going to sell it, but like you've done for family members of mine just recently, I mean, several different family members, just give an idea of what something's worth, a price if you're, you know, trying to decide whether you're doing insurance or doing, an estate. I mean, y'all give that service as well.
Well, it's really important to know what your stuff is worth. And, you know, we've talked about this a million times, probably need to talk about it a million more, because people need to hear the message. If you have something that's been passed down to you from family, you know it has value, but you're not exactly sure what that value is. You need to know for insurance purposes. You need to know for dividing it out purposes, so you don't give somebody in the family something worth $10,000 and something in the family worth $100 and right. think you were being equal. You know, that's the problem there, is people think they're dividing stuff up equally on occasion, and somebody gets the short end of the stick, and there's hurt feelings when there really shouldn't have been. We're sort of the tiebreaker with that kind of stuff. Bring your collection in, we'll evaluate it, appraise it. We've even divided stuff up for family members, boxed it up, so nobody had to choose. You know, it was almost like, okay, you each get a box of stuff. It's completely random. If anybody's at fault, it's Ron and Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins.
It's a neutral arbiter, right? Isn't that the term?
That sounds a lot nicer. Yeah. You're so fancy with your words there, Sean. We appreciate that.
Hey, let's talk this too. You and I have been talking for about a month now. The story everybody's hearing out there with supply chain issues. I mean, it's real. It's hitting people like day in and day out. But it's also coming for Christmas, where people can't get the gifts. But it's not coming for y'all. You saw this one coming.
We did. You know, we've been paying attention to all of this stuff throughout the course of the year, and we're in a current bump up in gold and silver demand, which means the lead times are stretching out even more. And we've been dealing with this since the start of COVID. So we bumped up our entire holiday shopping schedule for our customers literally by about 2 months. We already received our third shipment of engravables in, so those Christmas rounds and bars that you can get engraved and pass out to the family members as a cool gift. Those, we are already in our third shipment from our supplier. Usually that's first week in December. We put a rush order in so we can have it in the next week or so, right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. But we've already got that one in, received, and already out in customers' hands. So we stepped it up, whether you're looking for gold and silver, those engravable pieces, open-all knives, beautiful pieces of jewelry. We have loaded up our inventory, and we are stocked and ready to go.
I take this seriously enough that I'm going to come see y'all in the month of November. How about that? And do my shopping. Yeah, if I'm lying, I'm dying. I'm going to come do it. So
my heart can't take that.
Well, I respond to these news stories as well. All right, tell folks how to find you if they've never been there in person, and how to find you on the web.
Yeah, in person, right here in Midtown Mobile, 2204 Government Street. We're just down the street from Whataburger. I think everybody knows where that is. Online, mobilebaycoins.com. You can check us out on Facebook and on Instagram. And if you want to listen to us talking about gold and silver, those appraisals, all those types of things, check out the podcast, Two Guys and Some Change on the website, In the Real World, every Tuesday evening, 6 to 7 on FM Talk 106.5.
Thanks, Angelo.
You have a good one, sir.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Wow. Wow. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I'm about to go to this story about the bowling alley, but before I do, looking at the text line, and Michael on the text line, who's been texting with us for a long time. So when he says something, I believe it's something that happened. Michael says, I just witnessed a shooting on Dolphin Street near the interstate. So Dolphin in 65. Trying to find out. He said a dark blue car pulled up by a light blue car at the service road intersection. Dark blue fires a magazine of about 13 shots and sped off south on 65. Light blue pulled over, got out, looked at himself, then drove the wrong way, headed north on 65. So this is just happening now. So you're hearing about this. Not far, the next exit up from where we are on, we're here at airport in 65. So just right up the road. So shooting. So we'll be probably hearing about this later in the news, but Michael calling it that just happened. And so, I mean, if probably out on law enforcement scanners, but, a lot of law enforcement listens to the show. That was just called in. Yeah, I was going to talk about this bowling alley thing. How about violence thing? My foot. Violence. Our news partners, WKRG, you heard Devin reporting on this. A shooter began firing inside a Mobile bowling alley Tuesday night. When their target fled outside, the shooter followed, firing as they went. So let me paint this picture here. That's going to the bowling alley is like a legitimate thing for me to take children to go do. It's not any rough and tumble, any kind of situation they shouldn't be in. We're going to the bowling alley. Mobile police said in a news release that four people were shot in the incident. Police responded to shots fired, called to the AMF Bowling Company, 4120 Government Boulevard, at 10:45 Tuesday night, where they found two women and two men with gunshot wounds. During the investigation, police determined there was a fight between, quote, an unknown female suspect, end quote, and at least one of the people shot. People said during the fight, the suspect pulled out a gun during and fired at one of the male victims inside the bowling alley. The victim fled outside the bowling alley. Suspect followed, still firing. Three gunshot victims were taken to the hospital in what police called non-life-threatening injuries. A fourth victim was taken by private vehicle to the hospital, also with non-life-threatening injuries. They're at the bowling alley on a Tuesday night. So there you go. That's going. Then Michael texting in that we got this shooting that just went down. Yeah. So on, by the way, program note, coming up on Friday's show, I think at in the noon hour, it looks like Mobile Mayor Cindy Stimson is going to join us. We're talking about the 100-day plan for that. But, you know, safety, obviously, a big part of it. I don't know. I don't know that you can, and I've had law enforcement folks say, you can't, like, arrest your way out of this. You can't arrest your way out of this. So how do we get out of this? I mean, here we are in our city, and people are like, well, I'm going to move out. This is my city. I'm a Mobilian. Okay, not that I don't have plenty of friends that live in Spanish Fort and Daphne and Fairhope and Somerdale and Loxley that live on Dolphin Island but this is where I live, and we got. And is it just Mobile that has these issues? Heck no. You look around the country, but this is the city I live in. And to say now I've had enough, that would not be true, because I had enough a decade ago. But I mean, it is out. I mean, no, that's just cliche, out of control. It's unacceptable. Unacceptable. Update, I guess they, a lot of law enforcement at Spring Hill, maybe Spring Hill stopped at the tracks now. Matthew says, I was just at 65 on Government, saw a lot of sheriff's deputies headed north with lights and sirens on. Thought it was odd, probably tied to the Dolphin Street shooting. Yeah, Travis says, that is a regular occurrence in Mobile. That kind of small stuff doesn't make the news. If the actual stats of shooting hits the news, it would send Mobile into a panic. Grant said, that's why I'm armed. If they pulled out a gun in front of my children, I would turn their head into a canoe. Yeah, Backstrap Stacker, but the blank is wrong with people. This is what happens when there's no consequences, and even if arrested, they don't face trial for 3 to 4 years. It's the exact conversation we're having on the show yesterday with Mobile County Commissioner Randall DeWitt, right? About now, thank goodness, the judge is moving from 8 weeks of trial to, I think it's 32, to get more of this process. People aren't, they're not pleading because, I mean, if you were up there and you're in that situation, would you be pleading guilty if you knew that it could be years? It could be years before you had to see a courtroom? No, it's the threat of, hey, here's a jury, they're seated, that gets people to plead. Hal says, for years, some of us have been trying to get someone to listen to us about the rise of thuggery in our neighborhood. Nobody wanted to hear us folks on DIP. Now the metastatic thug cancer has spread. The chain is only as strong as its weakest link. But my, isn't downtown nice? Now, that's something that Hal's been saying for years, that too much attention was put on downtown and not on areas like the Parkway. But this stuff is everywhere. It's at 65 and Dolphin Street. It's at the dang bowling alley. It's around the country, too, and it's unacceptable.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey and his crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Look at these reviews online of 1-800-GOT-JUNK right here in Mobile and Baldwin County. So this is Trey and the crew. On time and professional. On time, professional, fast, caring, cost effective. The two young men that helped me empty out my house after my mom died were heaven sent. Thank you. Another one here, on time, fast, clean, courteous, good pricing, courteous workers. Another one, polite, professional. And by the way, I've told you that when they've been at our house and at here at the station, they have been just that, polite and professional and on time. And I'll say this too, the caliber of people that are working for 1-800-GOT-JUNK and my buddy Trey, his son's one of them, so Andrew's other, the great guys. I'm funny about people in my house. I don't know. I got to, you know, you get over it, but I'm funny. Not with those guys. They've been so good that I'm like, yeah, come on in. I mean, you know, and if I got to walk another room, take a car, whatever, it's fine. It's fine. It's that kind of local company, that local vibe. Somebody that I know, somebody that I've known for a long time, even before he was doing this, Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They exhibit that. They're just the kind of people. Okay, they're the kind of people I'd leave in my living room, right, or leave in my kitchen. They're just good folks. And if you've got junk you need gone, maybe even before the holidays get here, you want to get rid of that junk, give them a call, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com and see what we've been talking about. Set that appointment. They'll find out a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you, and then they'll set the appointment. And then guess what? They show up. They're like, oh, here they are. They're here for their appointment. And then all you do is show them the junk you want gone. They'll quote you a price. If you say yes, they get it gone right then. So check them out. 1-800-GOT-JUNK on the phone or 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com right there on that computer machine. All right. I want to get to a lot of text here that's been coming in. So Brandon says, Sean, all these shootings by these young people are ridiculous. We have to start holding parents accountable. I hear in your voice how shaken you are, and it saddens me. It does. It shakes me, Brent. It saddens me, though, because this is – it's easy for people to say, well, this just sucks, and I'm just moving away. Well, I'm not. This is where I live. I'm not giving up, but I am over it and been over it for a decade. John says, I was at Gulf Bowl in Foley about 10 years ago when a riot broke out among a huge group of teenagers. My wife and I hit the emergency exit, setting off the fire alarms, but we got the heck away from the fight. It's actually a good idea, John. I didn't think, keep your eye, you know, always keep your eye on the door and the emergency exit, too. Somebody said the victim had Texas tag, looked like he had been shot a few times in the leg area. You're hearing about this right now. It'll end up being part of the news report, and then Dan and Dalton will be talking about it tomorrow morning. Cade says it starts with leadership, and then no shootings in Spring Hill. Oh, wait, I forgot. I don't know what that means. Backstrap Stacker says, yeah, what's wrong with people? What happens when there are no consequences? Even if arrested, they don't face trial for 3 or 4 years. My friend Supermom says, you just never know when indiscriminate violence will come for you. Our state country has gone mad. Grant says, Sean, what do you do if you're just chilling with the family, bowling, and a bunch of blank, blank thugs start fighting and getting a gunfight around your family? Would you be like me? lay their blank down, eliminate the threat, and evacuate the people and answer questions afterwards. Grant, who knows what I would do? I probably don't even know. I may not even have a firearm. I probably don't even know which end of it does the shooting, right? I probably wouldn't have one on my person. Or I tell you what, if I did have one on my person, the last thing in the world I ever want to do, Grant, is have to use it. I take that drop dead seriously. And maybe pun intended. It's the last thing. I think there are people that go out and do this half-arsed concealed carry. So people see they're concealing, but they want people to see they have it. I don't get that. I mean, tactically, I don't get it. You know, because like the whole thing where people, you know, we're going to put a AR, put something over their shoulder and go sit in Chipotle with it. Well, if tactically, you're the loser because they're going to shoot you first. So number one, conceal the weapon. And number two, have no desire, have the ability and the training and the willingness to use that firearm to defend the innocent lives, yours and other innocent lives. But have no desire to ever do it. And I just, and I think 99% of y'all don't. I have talked to people over the years that I think are just like waiting for that day. God, I pray that day never happens. I want to abate the amount of violence. Now, how do we do this? And once again, in defense, we'll talk about this. We've been talking about it for a long time on the show. It's not just a problem here. It's a problem elsewhere. But the problem is, this is where I live. Okay? This is what I'm worried about first. I'm worried about people in gun violence in St. Louis or New Orleans or Atlanta or New York or somewhere. I'm worried about them too, but not before I'm worried about here at home. If we can learn something from other places. This texter here, and I'll keep their name offline here, but said, man, I've been a law enforcement officer in Mobile for 28 years. My father was one for almost 40 years. Mobile had consistently gotten worse and worse. It's a complex issue that honestly, if I text you the problems I see would offend many. Trust me, it's worse than you think or what you see on the news or will hear from the local government. What are the real, you know, they'll always have these symposiums, blah, we're going to get down to the real problems. And maybe they're trying. Can you change this direction? What's in people's hearts? The idea that they're going to go get all the guns off the street. This is why I talk about when I talk about people who want to limit Second Amendment rights. I said, you're not. Look at osmosis. You could take it. If you took all the guns away from the people that told you they had guns, then the people who lied to you would still have the guns. And therefore, the people who then didn't have guns would be afraid of the people that had guns, so they would illegally get guns too. Jace well said. He said, saying I'm done and leaving is how you get Detroit. Yep, I'm not leaving. Fire Dog says using a firearm is easy, even in a clear-cut situation. The afterward is hard. Absolutely. Matthew says, all sheriff's deputies are at Dolphin 65, just rode by. Notice City of Mobile Police. Very interesting. Sheriff's office responded. Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, Grant says Chicago is a perfect example. Once again, you can. Something else has to change. Because the guns will fire. It's osmosis. It's supply and demand. So we have to lessen the demand. And not just for the demand for guns, but for that there's an accepting this violence. I don't have the answers. I'm not going to sit here and say, I'll tell you what you do. I'll tell you everything you need to do to fix. I don't know. But I am concerned and have been concerned. And I know I'm not alone. All right, we're going to keep this conversation going. And I'm always looking for real world good ideas. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Y'all check out the app. It's over at the App Store for iPhone users, Google Play for Android users, and I'll see y'all tomorrow.